Nobody trusts anybody now. We're all very tired.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Hate to Interrupt podcast, the number one conspiracy theory podcast in the world. I'm Daniel, the Demon Slayer. I remember it, so you don't have to.
I'm Nick from Stop Culture.
I'm VHS guy, Nick.
So today we're doing the Spook to Spookter Up, Hate to Interrupt Halloween Spooktacular. I'm going to be your host, Nick. And
did
I'm going
to come
to
up with that on the spot? That was fucking impressive.
No, I wrote it down. But yeah, so we've been talking about doing this for a while because I'm like a major supernatural, paranormal, metaphysical, whatever guy. I'm into all this weird stuff about aliens and reincarnation, fucking, you know, afterlife, ghosts, whatever, UFOs. And the other two guys on the podcast really aren't. So my goal with this is to go over some of the most interesting and I think persuasive slash convincing supernatural concepts and stories, reports, testimonials that I've come across throughout my, I mean, I actually do kind of research this stuff a lot. So I'm going to be covering five topics throughout this whole presentation I'm doing, and they're just going to be, you know, butting in to be like, that's fucking dumb or that's cool or whatever, whatever you guys have to say. And the five topics are reincarnation, UFOs, near-death experiences, miscellaneous spooky stuff, which is there's a lot of fun stuff in there. And then a short conclusion. So unless you guys have anything to say, I'll just get right into it.
I should preface that even though I don't believe in most of the shit you're going to tell us, it's still, like, fun and interesting to learn about this stuff and, like, hear, like, stuff like this. Because, like, even if they're, like, 9.9 out of 10 times not true, they're at least, like, still fun to, like, as, like, campfire stories, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think it's all bullshit.
Well, I feel like unless you guys are just going to say no, you didn't persuade me at all, I feel like there's at least going to be one thing in this that you both can be like, okay, I don't really know how to explain that, but we'll see.
I mean, it just,
let me know
it's
at
just
the
entire,
end if that it, if you
it's
feel
just
that
entirely
way.
Dependent on the topic, you know, like there are some things that like I am willing to believe a little more than other things, you know, like I am willing to believe that something in the same, something that is within the concept of aliens is more believable than like ghosts and reincarnations and shit. You know, that's just kind of how I think personally, but, you know.
Well, like, my whole ethos with this stuff is, like, I only really chose stuff that's been, like, you know, studied by whether it's doctors, scientists. I mean, you know, admittedly, they are in the fringe of the scientific community, but they have been doing research about this stuff for their entire careers. It's their life's work. It's been studied by their peers. So it's not just like, oh, this one guy had a reincarnation experience and like ABC News wrote about it or whatever. It's like, you know, studied by the medical community, and there's been reports and verification that's done and stuff like that. So like everything that I'm talking about here basically is like that, except for the we'll get to the Bigfoot stuff. That's not but you'll see.
I don't want to believe in reincarnation, because if it were true, I'd be reincarnated as like a bot fly or something fucked.
That's not really that's not how it works usually. Usually only go up. Yeah. So
I mean, I'm just basing it off of like the basic concepts of Hinduism. And and when looking at it from that perspective, I've done a lot of terrible shit where I'm going to be reincarnated as like something really awful if reincarnation is a thing.
That's what I said. So maybe we're on the same page.
All right. So I'll start. This is the reincarnation section. So
beautiful.
Ryan Hammond was a boy who knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he lived a past life as an old Hollywood actor and agent named Marty Martin. Ryan's journey with past life memories started when he began recalling in shockingly descriptive fashion minute details from his quote unquote old life. He cried at night because he grieved for his old mom and the children he left behind in this old life as a supposed early Hollywood actor. He found comfort in old films and stories about Hollywood's beginnings. One night, as his mom flipped through the pages of a nonfiction book about Hollywood history, one of the actors in a photograph immediately caught Ryan's attention. He told her, "That's me, Mom. That's who I used to be." She did some digging.
How old is he here in this portion of the story?
It's like 5 or 6 when they first found the actor's name. But she did some digging and found the actor's name. And as a shot in the dark, she sent a letter explaining her situation to this man's living relatives alongside a document that contained dozens of statements from Ryan about his past life to see if the family could confirm them as true facts about their deceased patriarch. She also got one of the world's leading reincarnation researchers on board to record and verify the account. His name is Dr. Jim Tucker, and we'll get to him and his research in a second. As it turns out of the 55 statements Ryan made about his past life, the family was able to confirm 50 of them as factual statements about their deceased father's life. Ryan knew all sorts of hyper-specific details about Marty's life that weren't available for public consumption, such as his favorite restaurant in Chinatown, his political leanings and associations, and even a little bit about the services his agency provided for clients. As I mentioned before, 50 of Ryan's statements were declared factual by Marty's remaining family members, but beyond that, Dr. Jim Tucker, a reputable child psychiatrist and metaphysical researcher at the University of Virginia, confirmed and published Ryan's case. In the years following, this account has been reviewed by several other researchers in the field and confirmed as legitimate. So, I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
When was this?
The story was covered by the media back in like 2010. Since then, well, it's been covered by the media. Like, it was on like ABC News, but it's also been studied at this place that I'm going to tell you about. Like, there at the University of Virginia, there's a group of psychiatrists that study reincarnation, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences. They're called the Division of Perceptual Studies. So they kind of study all this esoteric stuff, but they're all like pretty reputable child psychiatrists and just, you know, general social science people.
Groups that specialize in things like that is they're looking for it, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're definitely looking for the stuff, but
it's like an innate bias.
It's a bias, but I mean, like, how do you explain this kid knowing 50 like highly specific details about this random guy? Like, I should specify. Like, when
it said he takes solace in old movies, so he knew a lot about these people probably just through watching these movies. He had access to the internet.
No, but this guy wasn't famous. He was an actor, yeah, but he was like an extra. Like, they saw his picture in this old movie that he wasn't even credited in the picture. They had to do like serious digging to even find out who the guy was, and none of the stuff that he knew about this dude was public knowledge at all. It was
maybe
like,
I'd
all
have
like
to know
random
what the
stuff.
50 maybe if I knew what the 50 facts were, I could be a little bit more swayed, but like,
yeah,
they could be very generic facts.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, unless like there was something like very like hyper specific, like, oh, like his favorite food was spaghetti with hot dogs and like hot sauce or whatever. Like, if you had said something like that, then like maybe I could be like a little more convinced.
He had a
but like
Texas shaped wart on the underside of his wiener.
Yeah, like for all I know, like one of the 50 facts said was like, oh, he has like gray hair. Like, yeah, no shit, like we can all see his like fucking gray hair on like both in the movie and in like on Google and shit, you know. It's like,
well no, so, like, so the things, the ones that I put out in this document, I know a couple more of them off the top of my head. He knew what the guy's favorite restaurant was in Chinatown. Like, how the fuck would you know that? He knew his political leanings and like private associations he had with senators that were not public knowledge, and he knew about the services, like pretty weird services that his agency provided for clients, like helping them get like change their stage names and stuff like that.
But who also questioned him? Because you said a psychiatrist who specialized in like reincarnation. Like, if it's a kid, who knows if he wasn't like swayed on some of these questions? Like, yeah. It's such a weird setup. Like,
I was thinking the same thing, because like I would need to see like the actual like procedure of how they like set up this experiment and how they ask the questions. Like, because for all I know, they could have like led the kid into like saying something specific that they wanted to hear. But like, there's no way we can know that for sure unless like we actually see the experiment like in person and see what type of questioning they use when asking the kid.
Insofar as I understand the case, there's actually like a bias against reincarnation, at least within the family, because they were like hardcore Baptist Christians who did not want to believe in any of this stuff at all. So when the kids started talking about like past life memories, the dad especially was like, "That's we don't fuck around with that. That's not us." You know, like he didn't even want to go there with the kid. But then I guess he kept on like talking about it so much that they tried to reach out to this guy, Jim Tucker, who does this kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, like I guess you could say that he's biased in a certain way, but he wants to like suss out whether these things are genuine or not, because it makes him look bad if it's just like.
But it makes him look good if he has a story like this where he has 50 out of 55 questions right, you know?
I can try. Maybe another time I can find you the exactly what the 50 statements were. But I mean, from my perspective,
there's a way this I could be swayed on this possibly if I like literally had enough information. But it's something I would be so skeptical about, and I'd have to know the people that are involved to know whether like the bias.
And you got to keep in mind that like kids have wild imaginations. They'll come up with just like the weirdest shit ever, and. You know, coincidences also happen. So like every now and then, maybe he'll say, "Oh yeah, in my past life, I really loved doing the chubby bunny challenge." And then it turns out actually he did like doing the chubby bunny challenge. Like shit like that just like tends to happen, you know, but it's more just like, oh, it's like a very strange and freaky coincidence more than boy, was this dude a fucking extra and agent and also, back in the day, you know.
Whenever you kind of like stroke a kid's imagination, you're like if like say I said some weird shit as a kid, right? Like, and they're like, "Oh, that's crazy." Like if I said I saw the Easter Bunny, I know for a fact I saw him. Like I looked out the window and I saw the Easter Bunny, right? And somebody's like, "Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, the Easter Bunny must have been outside, right?" And they're like, you're like, "Fuck yeah, people fucking believe this shit." Then fucking I'm like laying in bed and I'm like looking at my fucking ceiling fan, right? And I'm like, "I saw SpongeBob in the ceiling fan." And parents are like, "Yeah, you saw SpongeBob in the ceiling fan," you know? And then it just feeds into that fucking weird imagination, just spouting fucking weird shit. I don't know.
Yeah. And the fact that like there are scientists that are just like looking for these things, just like it, like that's a prime example of feeding into a child's imagination. I can't imagine like the type of shit that they got out of him based on how they questioned him, which again, we can't know for sure because we can't see any data results. We can't see what specific questions they asked him. We can't even see like how the experiment was even like organized, you know? So
well, if you watch interviews with him and read his book and stuff, he does talk about the process. I didn't really write that stuff down. I'm just like getting bullet points down about the case and everything. But anyway, I'll just keep going because I go into some different, sources and stuff here too.
Okay. Yeah.
So while Ryan's story sounds fantastical, it's not all that different from many of the cases Dr. Jim Tucker and his team at University of Virginia's Department of Perceptual Studies have investigated throughout the past five decades. It's called the Division of Perceptual Studies. Division of Perceptual Studies, or DOPS, has documented the accounts of over 2,500 children like Ryan who remember bits and pieces of information about their supposed previous lives. And of those 2,500 accounts, DOPS classifies over 70% of them as quote-unquote solved cases, which means they were able to find and verify a real deceased person who matched the name and description the child's subject offered during investigation.
So I have a question. They're saying kids a lot. Like, is it something they forget as they get older, or is it something that like they are more interested in? Like, why is it kids?
That's like in this kind of community where people believe in this stuff, like, yeah, these memories are generally had by young kids and then forgotten as they age. Like, there's actually a show on Netflix called Surviving Death where they interview this kid and they bring him to the family, like the people who confirmed those 50 statements as being true about Marty Martin, their dad who died. And when Ryan met him, he was like 14 or something, and he just like didn't really remember any of the stuff anymore. So it was kind of awkward. They were like, I wish I knew you when you were younger. But he was like, yeah, I just kind of like don't really have the memories anymore. So it's kind of something apparently that fades as you get older.
Yeah, I feel like it's kids' imaginations, man.
Yeah, it's just primarily kids who are the ones who experience this shit, and then just, so coincidentally, just by magic, when they become adults, they just lose most of this knowledge. As the kids would say, I find that a bit dead-ass sus.
Yeah, but it's not really, when you consider the fact that a lot of, not just reincarnation or like past life memories, happen to be held by kids. It's like a lot of these different kinds of supernatural or like psychic or, you know, extrasensory perception, things like that. A lot of them are shared by kids. Like they're the ones who have these abilities. And then as they grow up and I guess get more integrated into like the physical world, they kind of forget about it. So it's like, I guess the theory is that like kids are sort of closer to whatever came before life, so they're more likely to have these memories. I mean, I get what you guys are
saying. The only thing that kind of makes me even like kind of consider it as a possibility is like the idea of like whenever I wake up and I had like a fucking wild ass dream, it like just disappears from my brain no matter how hard I try. But like I still err on the side of like bullshit.
All right, so the majority of the Western world scientific community has filed away and dismissed reincarnation, along with all the other fanciful woo-woo ideas the hippies won't stop yapping about. But scientists like Jim Tucker and his team at DOPS have decided to take a different approach concerning these esoteric concepts. Instead of disregarding them out of hand, they use the scientific method to see if they hold up against scrutiny. And surprisingly enough, some of Tucker's peers are beginning to think there might be more than meets the eye here. Michael Levin, the director of the Center of Regenerative and Developmental Biology at Tufts University, wrote an academic review of Tucker's book, referring to his findings as, quote, a first-rate piece of research, and also noting that our current methods and concepts have no way of dealing with these data. One of the most striking aspects of the reincarnation research that DOPS and similar organizations are conducting deals with shared birthmarks, scars, and deformities between children and their purported previous incarnations. Oftentimes, these scarred birthmarks mirror lethal injuries sustained in the life prior. Nearly 20% of the case files in the DOPS database contain instances of shared birthmarks. One of the most interesting and renowned cases of this nature is the story of Semil Ferici and Semil Hayek. Semil Hayek was something of a real-life folkloric outlaw in 1930s Turkey. He made a name for himself throughout his province with acts of petty larceny and eventually with the police through acts of murder. It would seem, however, that Semil's guilty conscience got the better of him as he eventually turned himself into the police, who sentenced him to death. But being the cunning outlaw he was, he devised a plan in which he switched clothes with his wife at a hospital after feigning an illness, allowing him to escape and go back on the run. I thought it was weird that he like turned himself in only to escape days later, but I don't know. After searching for him for 2 years, the police tracked down Samil's whereabouts to a safe house where a shootout ensued. Being outmanned and outgunned, Semil decided to end his own life rather than return to custody, so he shot himself through the neck at point-blank range. But here's where the story gets into reincarnation territory. Because two days later, a distant relative of Semil named Mikhail Ferici had a son with a bleeding birthmark on his neck in the very same location of Semil's self-inflicted entry wound. Mikhail and his wife Sabri named the boy Daham at birth, but once he could talk, it didn't take long at all for Daham to insist upon being called another name, Semil, which is the name he continued to use throughout his entire life.
So but, another issue with this one is like, they already made that association. You said the parents noticed the birthmark, right?
I didn't say they noticed it. It's just there. You know, I don't know if they knew it was. I'm not aware if they knew that the other guy had the birthmark, too. But or the entry wound.
Well, it sounded like they knew he existed already.
Well, yeah, they were related. I don't know if they knew that he died, because it was the 1930s and he was a distant relative of theirs. So I don't know if they, I doubt that they would have known like right away that he died. They weren't really close as far as I know. But.
Okay. Continue.
So did who was the first person within the family to just come up with that name and just that crazy coincidence? Like, what did the child just magically like speak up one day and said, "Yes, I am Emil," or whatever name you just said? Like, is that what happened? Samuel, yep. Yeah.
As far as I know, yeah, yeah. The kid was the one who said that. That's what my name is. Yeah.
Okay.
But just to make, because they're both, you know, the kid wants to be called Samuel, so I'm just going to refer, his actual name is Daham, so just so as I'm telling the story, it's easier for you guys, I'll refer to Samuel II as Daham, that's the kid. So as Daham [S2] Sure. [S1] Got older, he had constant nightmares about traumatic and violent experiences he went through in his supposed past life. And much like Ryan Hammond, Daham began to exhibit behaviors and recall the memories of his former incarnation. In fact, Daham knew so much about his past life that once he was able to meet Samil's surviving family members, they pleaded with Daham's parents to let them adopt the child for their own. Eventually, Dr. Ian Stevenson, the founder of DOPS, caught wind of this story and came to interview Daham and his family later in life. He was attracted to the case because of the shared birthmarks, but there was one piece of the puzzle he felt might be missing. By this time, the fact that Daham had a birthmark where Samil's entry wound was common knowledge, but given the positioning of Samil's wound, there should also be an exit wound on the top of his skull. When Stevenson interviewed the family, he nonchalantly asked them if Daham had any other birthmarks or scars, making sure not to specify on which part of his body he was referring to. And sure enough, Daham immediately revealed a scar on the top of his scalp in the same location that Samuel's exit wound was purported to be by witnesses at the time. So that's two wounds, like the entry wound and the exit wound that they both of these apparent incarnations shared. So that to me was really crazy. And like I said, 20% of these cases have stuff like that they've studied. That to me is pretty fucking weird, you know?
It's weird. I just don't know if it's true.
I mean, yeah, like the way you can say it, like everyone's just lying. Like you could just say that, but I mean, I don't know. At some point, I feel like you have to lend some credibility to these people that are doing this, right? Like
there's also like, I'm so many people tell like, these stories like they're true about like alien abductions and things like that from those times. It's like,
yeah, but I mean, do they have like an entire division of a well-respected university of like fully accredited psychologists that are psychiatrists that are working on this stuff? Like that's not usually the case.
You think it was like that in the 30s?
No, the interview was taking place in the 60s. So the interview was taking place when Daham was an older man, like he was in his 30s. So, yeah.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, this just doesn't do anything for me, you know? Like,
I think if I read up on it and I could, like, I felt like I could believe it, I could see it. This is just one of those things where you'd really have to, like, kind of heavily scrutinize, I feel like. Because it's one of those things where, like, when anything's supernatural, the problem is people feel like whenever they, like, if they can prove something supernatural to everybody, then it's, like, such a big story. And there's just so much, like, what's the word? Like, publicity to get out of it. It's not like they have to, like, create a cure for cancer and actually make some work or, like, do something fucking crazy, right? They just have to fucking make people believe that ghosts exist.
Yeah, but lying. I mean, yeah. It's not like these guys are super mainstream. Like they have books and, you know, they write books and they write studies and they compile research and stuff, but they're not like millionaires or anything. They're not household names. They're just fucking doing this kind of work. Yeah, but
they want to get invited on Joe Rogan, you know?
You also said it yourself, like they didn't interview him when he was a kid. They interviewed him like when he was like fully grown up and like experience like other shit afterwards, you know? So like for all I know, like maybe I'm not saying like he's lying, I don't want to like go that far, but like, you know, it's been like what, a pretty sizable amount of decades since you were a kid and had these experiences. Like, there is a chance you're misremembering shit. Jesus, I don't know why I couldn't pronounce that. There's a chance they could be misremembering shit or like playing with the truth in some way, you know? Because, like, I mean, I'm not gonna go so far as to say like these people involved are like looking for clout or something, but again, I am willing to say that there is a very high possibility that they are either misremembering something or just, you know, scrutinizing what actually happened to make it more sensational.
Well, you know?
Least that's kind of what I would do.
You guys, you know, have to remember that shit that these people who are conducting these research and doing these interviews, like, you said that they have a bias in favor of finding evidence of reincarnation, which that might be true, but they also have a lot of scrutiny on them, because if they were to be discovered, like, just fudging evidence and just, like, talking to a kid who they could tell was clearly lying, or a family that was clearly lying and making shit up, they would probably not be able to work at the University of Virginia anymore. So they're not just like quacks or something. They are like reputable people. They're not just like going out here telling lies. You know,
most other like scientists and like psychiatric groups probably don't take them seriously, though.
Well, they don't take them seriously because none of this stuff is taken seriously by them, you know.
Yeah, but you also have to keep in mind that, like, I get that they're like technically reputable people of science that are backed up by a university, but like there's a difference between like, oh, finding the results from something like this and then like, say, like a paleontologist finding fucking dinosaur fossils in the ground. Like, no matter how hard you try to like twist the narrative or like change like the experiment of something, it doesn't change the fact that you found a dinosaur bone in the desert, you know? Like that is like hard physical evidence proving, yes, there was a fucking dinosaur in the desert, and we have proof of it. We can literally see the dinosaur bones. Like, yeah, you might be able to like fudge the numbers in the sense that, oh, maybe it's this dinosaur or that dinosaur, or like maybe the dinosaur could do this and not that or something like that. Like, yeah, you could definitely like manipulate those types of data, but like at the end of the day, there's still a fucking dinosaur bone, like, in the desert that definitively proves what the paleontologists are looking for. That's not the same thing here, where it's like, you could technically, like, fuck around with the system and play into whatever you're looking for and say, look, see, this person reincarnated 100%, you know? Like, there's no, like, hard evidence for me to, like, latch onto, you know, compared to, like, a dinosaur.
I have a few questions. So, like, one, like, if reincarnation was like happening for almost everybody, why the fuck haven't I met somebody as a kid or like met somebody who like remembers these weird past life things? Like, I feel like it would, if it happened to so many people, more people would be having these memories, and it would be something that one of us has experienced, you know?
Well, in terms of what I've found as like why this answer to that question kind of gets like deep into the woo and the spirituality kind of shit. There's a concept in reincarnation lore, I guess you could say, that there's sort of a memory wipe that goes on, like, as you incarnate from your spiritual form to any body that you might go into. And for some people, it's not full, which is how you get stories like this, supposedly. Like I said, I don't want you guys to think that I just like buy into this stuff whole cloth. To me, it's very interesting. I don't necessarily know what I believe, but
I think it's interesting, but I just don't buy it. But like, also, like, what would be the point of reincarnation? Like, it seems completely like, that's the whole, even if I did want to believe it, like, it seems so fucking pointless.
Why?
Because who the fuck cares if you don't remember anything? You are your memories.
Well, you apparently remember things once you die. Like, once you are in your spiritual form again, you have access to all the memories that you've ever learned. Again, going deep into the woo, but you're able to choose what kind of life you want to live next based on lives you lived previously. And you're supposed to gain some sort of knowledge or like go on some sort of predetermined spiritual quest that you have like set out for yourself as like a spiritual being before you incarnate or make a choice to incarnate as a specific person. So That's kind of the answer for that. But I know that's yeah, probably not going to be satisfying to you.
I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's pointless. I wouldn't go that far. I definitely would find some use with it. Like, if I found out that I was actually the reincarnation of, like if I was, like, if I knew I was, like, the reincarnation of, like, fucking Ted Bundy or some shit, then, like, obviously my main takeaway is, yeah, don't kill people and don't be a fucking serial killer, you know? Like, I obviously can learn a lot from that, but, you know, in a less joking sense, if I knew what my life was back in the day, you know, I could look at that and go, okay, here are the things that I like and I hope to replicate, and here are some things that I don't like and I could learn to be a better person. You know, that's like the whole fucking premise of something like Mushoku Tensei, you know, learning from your past to be a better person, that type of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'd be like, if I'm a spirit now and I can just remember things forever, don't reincarnate me. That sounds fucking lame.
Well, I think that might be an option, but I don't know. So anyway, okay, yeah, so the story of the two Samiles might sound fantastical again, but scientists like Stevenson and Tucker have uncovered dozens or potentially hundreds more cases with similar characteristics. The last concept I want to cover in the reincarnation section of the pod is xenoglossy. Have you guys ever heard of xenoglossy? You know what that is?
No.
Mm-hmm. So xenoglossy refers to the rare occurrence of someone speaking or writing fluently in a language they never learned. And while these instances are rare, they're like much more rare than the shared birthmarks or even the, you know, the facts. Like,
I've heard of this shit.
Yeah. It's also common in, like, you know, demonic possession stories and stuff like that. But the xenoglossy story I've picked out to discuss here comes from perhaps the most renowned psychiatrist/researcher in this field, Dr. Brian Weiss. Brian Weiss is an Ivy League educated psychiatrist who eventually rose to become the head of psychiatry at the Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami. Early in his career, he used hypnosis techniques to help patients unearth and heal from repressed traumatic memories experienced in early childhood. But during one fateful hypnosis session, Dr. Weiss's patient began regressing a little too far back. In his book, Many Lives, Many Masters, Dr. Weiss details how his patient eventually delved into specific details regarding the personalities, lifestyles, and societies of her 86 former incarnations. Weiss has performed past life regression hypnosis on over 4,000 patients throughout his career, but for brevity's sake, I'm just going to tell you guys about the one hypnosis session that involved xenoglossy. A few years back, Weiss was doing a past life regression hypnosis session with a woman from China. She spoke absolutely no English, and she and Weiss were forced to use a translator during their session. The beginning of the session played out with Weiss speaking hypnosis commands to the translator in English, who relayed them to the patient in Chinese. But eventually, as the patient sank deeper into her past life memories, she began responding to Weiss in fluent English, which absolutely baffled the translator and the doctor, at which point there was no longer a need for a translator at all, so they just sat there for the remainder of the hypnosis session until the patient came to. Now, xenoglossy is rare, but it has been recorded in past life regression hypnosis sessions and from children who claim to have past life memories as people from different countries. So,
I have heard this story before. And I don't know if I necessarily have an explanation other than, like, hyper autism, but, I also don't believe in hypnosis. So,
well, I mean, I don't know if I can speak on, like, the total validity of hypnosis other than to say I've been hypnotized before. And it was a pretty fucking incredible experience. I don't know if it's the power of suggestion or what exactly it is, but unlike anything
people
I've ever
tried
experienced.
To hypnotize me before, but I'm also, yeah. I feel like if you're willing to let it happen, maybe it could happen. I don't know.
Yeah. So
I've used the move hypnotized in Pokemon. Does that count?
Tim, what do you think of that? That xenoglossy?
Yeah, again, like it's just like the other ones, you know, like it just doesn't do anything for me because, again, like it just all comes down to like the same things that I've been saying, you know, like suggestion, you know, there's some level of scrutiny that you kind of have to take into account with these types of stories. And, you know, as I've been saying before, you know, that like the innate bias like that comes between this sort of stuff, like, you know, and then when you throw in like hypnosis, it's just, you know. That's something I definitely don't believe in. So I don't know.
Was this person fluent in English, or did they just have some responses in English?
Well, I don't know if you could say that she was fluent in English, because she was responding to, I mean, she was responding to questions fluently. So I think that would meet the demands of what the definition of fluency actually is, being able to respond to commands in a language fluently. So
But there was a translator between them, though, right? I didn't mishear that.
Yeah, there was a translator, but the role of the translator eventually became like obsolete or redundant, because the patient who couldn't speak English before being hypnotized was speaking in English after the hypnosis.
Yeah,
the problem with whenever you throw hypnosis into anything, I automatically am just going to call bullshit, because it just, everything I've known about hypnosis is always just a parlor trick, right? So like, I definitely agree. If I saw something like this and I like knew the people, I would think it was mad fucking weird and it might sway me. But just like hearing the story, like I'm automatically just going to toss it out, just because like it's attached to, it's like if in like I was watching a pro wrestling match and like somebody actually won, like by like pinning somebody in a real wrestling move, I wouldn't believe it still, because I'm watching fucking WWE, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I'm just, for all I know, they could have just orchestrated the entire thing. Like I'm not saying that's what they did. I'm just saying that could be a possibility, you know? So, and yeah, when hypnosis is thrown in, I'm just like, unless it's like, so there's a difference between like something like this, where it's some random stranger that I have no fucking connection with, like being quote unquote hypnotized to speak perfect English correctly. And then something like, say, like my close friend or something who hypothetically speaking is also a skeptic. Like if they started doing like a bunch of weird shit, like being under a spell and then being able to speak in perfect Russian or some shit, you know, like then I would be a little more kind of open to the idea of, okay, there's might be some truth and reality to this. But
yeah, that's kind of where I'd have to see it, like, to believe it type of thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you can say, it's why, like, for example, I don't take most of, say, like alien invasion or alien abduction or alien whatever things seriously, because you can be as detailed as you fucking want, but unless I see the thing that you're talking about, like, I have, like, zero reason or motivation to believe anything that's happening.
Well, I guess the thing with me is, like, if this story was coming from fucking some hypnotist named like Alice in Bushwick, you know, who's just like has an Etsy shop or something, I'd be like, okay, yeah,
Janice from New Jersey. If it was some shit like that, I'd been like, no, fuck you.
But like I said, this guy is very respected. He's the head of psychiatry at the Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami. That's a pretty fucking big deal. Ivy League educated dude, pretty reputable. I don't know. I just think that does lend it more credibility from where I'm standing. But do you guys want to move on to the aliens section?
Sure, I guess so.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. All right. So this first incident is called the Aerial School Incident. This is one of the most highly publicized mass UFO encounters that's ever been recorded. So on September 16th, 1994, there was a mass UFO sighting outside Rua, Zimbabwe. 62 pupils at the aerial school, aged between 6 and 12, said that they saw one or more silver craft descend from the sky and land on a field near their school. 2 days prior to the incident in Ariel, there had been a number of UFO sightings throughout southern Africa. There had been numerous reports of a bright fireball passing through the sky at night. The sightings at Ariel occurred at 10 a.m. on September 16th when pupils were outside on a mid-morning break. The adult faculty at the school were inside having a meeting at the time. The entire incident lasted about 15 minutes. When the children returned to class, they told the teachers what they had seen but were dismissed. When they returned home, some told their parents. Many of those parents came to school the next day to discuss what had happened with the faculty. The sighting was reported on ZBC Radio, a local radio station. After hearing the ZBC broadcast, the BBC's correspondent in Zimbabwe, Tim Leach, visited the school 3 days later to film interviews with pupils and staff. After investigating this incident, Leach stated, "I could handle war zones, but I could not handle this." Investigator Cynthia Hind visited the school on September 20th. She interviewed some of the children and asked them to draw pictures of what they had seen. She reported that the children all told her the same story. 2 months later, and this is the guy with the most credibility out of all the investigators, after the story had become an international curiosity, Harvard University professor of psychiatry and Pulitzer Prize-winning author John Mack visited the Ariel School to interview the witnesses. Throughout the 1990s, Mack had investigated UFO sightings and the alien abduction phenomenon. According to the collective interviews of Hind, Leach, and Mack, 62 children between the ages of 6 and 12 said that they had seen at least one UFO that day. One or more silver objects, usually described as discs, appeared in the sky. Then they floated down to a field of brush and small trees just outside the school property. Between one and four supposed extraterrestrial beings with large eyes and dressed all in black exited a craft and approached the children. At this point, many of the children ran, but some, mostly older pupils, stayed and watched the approach. According to Mack's interviews, the beings then telepathically communicated to the children an environmental message concerning the ways technology and pollution are destroying the Earth before returning to the spacecraft and flying away. In Mack's interviews, one fifth grader...
Wait, hold on. These aliens are fucking woke tree huggers? What the fuck? I can't believe the fucking Democrats hired these illegal-ass aliens to do this fucking woke-ass Captain Planet shit.
So,
when did you say this was?
94.
Military experiments?
I can't believe they...
And the power of suggestion.
I can't believe they made aliens political.
That's actually, it's very common that a lot of these people that have supposed alien interactions, they talk about telepathy all the time. That's very common. They say aliens don't actually speak. They put messages into your head, and they talk about how humanity is destroying the planet with pollution and over-reliance on technology. Super common theme with all of these things. But
do you think, like, so when people talk about how, like, oh, the aliens, like, telepathically injected into my brain this idea or whatever, do you think that's, like, that belongs to, like, a specific, like, race of aliens? Or is that just, like, a common, like, alien gene that, like, every single alien has, like, ever? Yeah, you know?
It's gotten to the point where it's so integral to almost... literally almost every one of these reports that I've read that I don't know what to think about it, but it's so common. Like, I read these things all the time, and it's more often than not they talk about telepathy. So I don't really know, but it's very common.
I believe that people see weird things flying through the sky. 100%. I think there's all kinds of fucking spacecrafts, or like, not spacecrafts, but like crafts that the military makes and test and do all kinds of weird shit. I just think maybe they saw something in the sky and they're like, this is going to be a sick story.
So all 62 of them, though? Kids, like, think about a group of any 62 random kids that you went to school with that didn't talk that day, probably, that aren't friends. Like, what instance are you going to get 62 random kids who were just happen to be outside at recess, all different grades? And they're all friends and all going to come up with the same story when interviewed separately by three different people, one of which is a Harvard professor and Pulitzer Prize winning author. Like, that's
Harvard
crazy.
Did this Harvard professor actually, like, see the aliens for himself? Did he actually see them telepathically?
No.
Professor X this shit into their brain? Okay, cool. Then, like, in that case, then, you know, if his only evidence is, oh, these kids told me this wild ass story about how these aliens, like, just Professor X'd their brains. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to take away from that. Like, congratulations, but unless, like, Pixar, it didn't happen. Like, unless, like, you can show me actual, like, footage of the shit that you're saying happened, then, like, I have very little reason to believe in this, you know?
Why do you think this kind of shit doesn't happen in the smartphone age, bro?
Yeah.
I mean, there are videos, and they're, like, usually pretty fucking shaky.
And they're just, coincidentally just shot on, like,
easily debunked.
They're all just so coincidentally shot on, like, the shittiest, like, iPhone quality, like, 180p, like, pixelated, like, footage ever. You know, like, that's
yeah, but
really,
why is
everybody pulling
really
out their fucking iPhone 16, throwing that shit on cinematic mode, and just fucking catching these aliens, bro?
There are also a few videos that were released by the Pentagon that they did not have any explanation for, that were taken by whether it was military personnel or intelligence officers, that they released through the New York Times in 2017. There's been kind of a slow leak of information and video footage that the Pentagon has held on to, classified for a while, that they didn't know how to explain. And a couple of those videos are infamous now within the UFO community, and even saw some mainstream shine, you know, in the media within the past 5 or 6 years or whatever. But
I saw the one with the fighter jets, right?
Yeah, there's a Tic Tac UFO one, and there's a couple of videos. There, one of them was debunked. I think there's one with, like, triangle UFOs that they figured out was, like, some kind of glare or something. But a lot of them haven't been yet. There's a couple that I don't really have any explanation for, and most
people
don't.
So during these, like, press conferences and interviews with like these established members at the Pentagon, did they ever use the word alien or extraterrestrial or UFO or something like that? Did they ever use these words?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what it was. I have a whole section about the hearing too. Right after this one about the children. So okay. All right, let me just finish this one, and we'll get to the hearing.
Okay, before you finish, I should just preface, because I've already said this before in our last episode, but like, I believe in the idea that some form of extraterrestrial life exists outside of our planet / solar system. I am willing to believe in that, but like I said, when I think of quote unquote aliens, I'm thinking of like microbacteria or something like that, you know, very like small life forms that are technically aliens because they're living organisms that aren't from Earth. You know, I am willing to believe in something like that, and there is scientific evidence that that shit exists in other planets or, you know, moons and stuff like that. But I find the idea of just green / black little men just on silver discs just fucking driving through Earth like it's a fucking air highway, like, and be like, yo, what if we like decided to fuck with these humans for a day or something like that? I find that like very unlikely.
I don't even believe it's just microorganisms. I feel like there's probably aliens out there somewhere. I don't necessarily think that they've made it to Earth or had any reason to come to Earth.
I mean, if they're so technologically advanced, why wouldn't they come to Earth? I mean, if there's anything we know about the universe, we know that it's largely uninhabited, and Earth is, as Tim said in our last episode, I think, a miracle, basically. There's not that many planets that could sustain or host or even have the conditions to bring about intelligent life. There's like a string of fucking crazy things that have to happen over the course of millions and thousands of years to create intelligent life. So why wouldn't they want to come check it out if they had the capacity and the facility to enable spaceflight like that?
And just to like add on to that, see, like where I'm kind of doubting from is, like I said, like the fact that like both Earth and humanity and just everything that has happened within the past like 10,000 years in general is just like the most successful cases of rolling a double six like for fucking 10,000 years in a row, you know? So I'm kind of the opinion that, like you said, most of space / the galaxy / our solar system is uninhabitable as fuck. So if there was other life forms out there that are arguably, let's say hypothetically, just as intelligent as us, or if not more intelligent, and are like centuries ahead of us in terms of their technology, that they actually have like spacecraft that they can do all this shit that a lot of people are saying, perhaps I'm just kind of speaking from a human perspective, but if I were an alien and I thought that I was the only intelligent being on this universe, and then I found out that there were other equally intelligent universes, like, I guess my first instinct would be, let's, like, show up and form some kind of, like, mutual formal connection or alliance, or at least, like, a meeting to just informing both of us that we both exist and we're going to keep each other
people,
in mind and like future explorations
that
and shit.
Though. That's like the whole thing is like a lot of people think that the government is aware of them and keeps it under wraps.
Which we'll get to in a second.
Which like I mean, okay, we'll get to that. But I'm just saying that like that's kind of what I would do. Like when I think of like species that are just intelligent at us, just as intelligent as us, I imagine they do something more sensible and not like essentially do glorified fucking TikTok pranks where they'd just be like, yo, what if we just like fucked with these school kids for like a couple of days? Like, no, what the fuck? I'm sorry. No.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a lot more to, I mean, you know, I'm going to just skip to the hearing part. Cause the rest of it is basically, I'll just say this as a bookend to the aerial school thing. 30 years later, the now adult witnesses of the aerial school incident still hold strong in their assuredness that the beings they witnessed were of extraterrestrial origin, and perhaps most importantly, the telepathic warnings they imparted on them are now more dire than ever. So, I don't know. And then now we'll get to the David Rush hearings in 2023, which is kind of what we've been alluding to. But in 2023, David Grush, a United States Air Force officer and former intelligence official, was interviewed by journalists and testified under oath in a U.S. House of Representatives hearing about UAP, which UAP, I don't know if you guys know, is like the new term for UFO. It stands for Unidentified Aerial Phenomena instead of Unidentified Aerial, or what is it, Flying Object. I guess like UFO has like a negative connotation now because they changed it, but in his capacity as a whistleblower, Grush claimed that the U.S. federal government, in collaboration with private aerospace companies, has highly secretive special access programs involved in the recovery and reverse engineering of quote-unquote non-human spacecraft and their dead pilots. The hearing was about 3 hours long, and a lot of it was boring C-SPAN type shit, so I'm just going to give you guys the juicy bits. Grush claims to have viewed documents reporting a spacecraft of non-human origin that had been recovered by Benito Mussolini's government in 1933 and procured by the U.S. in 1944 or 1945 with the assistance of the Vatican and coordinated intelligence efforts from the U.S., U.K., New Zealand, Australia, and Canada. Grush claims that people have been threatened and killed in order to conceal this program. Testimonies were also delivered by Ryan Graves, a former U.S. Navy fighter pilot, and David Fravor, a USN commander, on their experiences with unidentified flying objects. Fravor has also been interviewed on 60 Minutes about how his now infamous encounter with the so-called Tic Tac UFO changed his life. As I alluded to before, Grush claims that the U.S. federal government maintains a highly secretive UFO retrieval program and possesses multiple spacecraft of non-human origin, as well as corpses of deceased pilots. He also claims there is substantive evidence that white-collar crime took place to conceal UFO programs and that he had interviewed officials who said that people had been killed to conceal the programs. He said that UFOs could be coming from extra dimensions, that he had spoken with intelligence officials whom the U.S. military had briefed on quote-unquote football field-sized spacecraft, that the U.S. government transferred some crashed UFOs to a defense contractor, and that there was malevolent activity by UFOs. Grush said he came to these conclusions based on his interviews with 40 witnesses within the federal government over 4 years. When Representative Tim Burchett asked him if he had personal knowledge of people who have been harmed or injured in efforts to cover up or conceal the government's possession of extraterrestrial technology, Grush said yes, but that he was not able to provide details due to how highly classified the pertaining information was. So that's the hearing in 2023.
So I remember reading up on this, and I mean, it sounds like he basically just like edged everybody and then disappeared.
Well, he's not disappeared. So, like, he's just not, like, he's not as hot in the public eye because everybody moves on so quickly. There are things that he just literally can't say unless he would go to jail if he said the things that you're,
that's
you
what
want
I'm saying. Until he does, like, I.
Yeah. Again, this is just a like,
or
this
until
is the
it's
exact
like allow he's allowed to say it, right?
Yeah, unless this is the exact same shit that I was saying about the other thing, where it's like, unless I get like tangential proof, like at like the most I get out of this is just, guys, I totally saw aliens and there was some crazy shit. You better believe me. I'm not making this up. I'm totally telling
the thing
truth.
About
like,
him,
that's all that really just
he's not even
to me.
He's not even saying he saw anything. He's saying, like, people said they saw things.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even his firsthand account. It's, like, shit that other people said. So it's the exact same shit as the other thing that we were talking about.
I think there's a possibility that some things could be said that would make me believe it, but, like, I feel like I need that evidence. Like, I mean, there's just not enough there yet for me.
Yeah, like, I'm not really the type of person to like believe every single thing that the federal government announces, but you know, unless Joe Biden says, yeah, I saw an alien stick its finger up, you know, up Lloyd Austin's butthole, unless like he says something like that to confirm that there is physical evidence.
I think Joe Biden
is
like the last person you'd believe.
Yeah, I guess that's a bad example. But like either way, unless like a reputable person who works for the federal government, particularly from the like executive branch, who works as a secretary of something within this field. So like if Lloyd Austin came out and said, "Look, aliens are real, and I've got proof. Here are some like." Crisp, clear-cut footage. Not that, like, bullshit where it's like, yeah, those are, like, totally aliens, but, like, you gotta, like, really blink at it and really kind of see it, like, really pop up. And, like, the footage we have just coincidentally just happens to be in the shittiest 180p quality ever. Like, none of that shit. I just need to see actual footage of that to happen, and then also accounted by, you know, written documents or written accounts describing what happened, what they were doing, what they were covering, all that stuff, be as detailed as possible, then yeah, sure, I'll believe aliens exist. I'll start sucking up every single bullshit that comes out of UFOologists' mouths. Sure, I'll do all of that. But until then, like, I'm just not convinced.
I'm not even going to say I don't think the government has UFOs, right? It's just like, what does me thinking that's a, what does me like believing that do for me when there's no actual evidence right now?
All right. Well, I'm just going to say the thing that I told you guys last week, which is yes, you are right in that there was no tangible like documents provided by David Grush throughout the hearing. But again, it is the single most impactful and important development in the history of our country in terms of like actually getting this stuff mainstreamed. And if you ask me, this is like part of a coordinated effort to slowly prepare the public for an announcement that's inevitably going to come, which is what you guys are talking about, like Joe Biden or whoever the fuck it is, Kamala or Trump, within the next couple of years, like saying, yeah, this is actually going down. This is what they want, perhaps. And it might not be something that we're all too psyched about to hear. You know, so I don't know. And again, think about this dude. Why would he go in front of United States representatives, go under oath and lie? Like, why would he lie about
that?
Put his life
in danger
for that.
Honestly, part of the reason I don't believe it is because he's still alive.
Well, he was allowed to say certain things. He got everything he said. He was approved by higher ups to say. So that's why.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, whenever they announce it, I'll be like, oh, cool.
Or not cool, because there's some
honestly,
pretty fucked up theories about this stuff.
And honestly,
what are some of those theories? That's interesting.
Well, Tim, go on. I'll tell you guys.
And honestly, knowing people like Trump would be like the first person who would immediately blab that like fucking aliens existed. So the fact that he hasn't done it yet is, you know, kind of means something, you know, like
I'm sure
the
case, they wouldn't tell him though.
Exactly. That's basically, you just hit the nail on the head, because the CIA and like the deep state, so to speak, like, you know, unelected people that basically run the nuts and bolts of our federal government, intelligence agency people, they kind of look at the president as somebody that they don't have to tell everyone everything, because they can't really trust them to not say things for political means, you know, exactly like what you said about Trump. So they're not going to tell him shit like this, because he's liable to be like, if you like me, I'll tell everyone about the aliens and Roswell, and you know, like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what are the theories that would be with this announcement? I'm sure people listening would love to hear that.
Well, there are a lot. There's a lot of theories about what aliens want. I would say that a lot of it is connected to more of this like woo-woo kind of stuff, like the nature of consciousness. Because are you guys familiar with like the Greys? Like Tim, you're kind of mentioning them before. The little green men, basically, like the common depiction of aliens in our public consciousness or whatever. Apparently, like the leading theories says that those beings are actually like silicon-based life forms that don't have souls. They don't have like consciousness or anything, and they're very interested in the fact that humans potentially might or do. There's been a lot of talk about what extraterrestrials' religion might be, and
sounds like some L. Ron Hubbard shit. Yeah, I was gonna say, so you're telling me that like the real aliens did some fucking shadow clone jutsu shit, and they were just like hocus pocus, here's some fucking fake ass aliens with no soul. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Yeah, apparently the Greys are created by someone else. Like they're not actually real. They're like silicon based. They're created for a purpose to like pilot these crafts. And I don't know. That's just, you know, this is getting
okay.
Deep
but what's
into,
scary
like,
about
these theories?
That?
Well, what's scary
if that were the case?
Another theory is that, basically the entire history of humanity, like our origins, were basically a genetic experiment, you know, through experimentation we were created as like some kind of experiment of a higher civilization, which would be really fucking difficult for a lot of people to swallow. I don't know, these are all just like theories by potentially weird people on the internet that I've read, so there's no credibility behind this. This is just, you know, you asked.
Yeah, I'm not willing to believe that aliens were the ones responsible for Alexander the Great's like fucking conquest. I'm not willing to believe that shit. I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't know what to believe. I definitely believe that there's something going on with this. I don't know if it's that. I'm gonna hold out to say for sure until we get more information, but.
And also, like, okay, hypothetically speaking, let's assume that's correct. Like, aliens are single-handedly responsible for our existence and what we are today. Again, I guess I'm only speaking to this as someone who is a human being and not a alien. But if I were single-handedly responsible for creating an entire species of organisms, wouldn't I be also the type of person to have an ego and like essentially play God and like be these like huge upper echelon of races that like the human race would be subservient to? Like, I don't know. I guess that's kind of what I would be imagining. Like, if such a species created humans as they are, like that's what
I would do. But like, think about when we're kids, we just fucking have ant farms and just stare at them. You know,
just,
maybe we're there.
Watch
them. Farm.
Yeah, I don't know. These are just like, you know.
I mean, I'm not saying I believe that. I'm just saying theoretically.
I just want you guys to know none of this stuff was covered in the hearing. This was like, you know, this is more fringe, like potential explanations for what they want, why they're here, blah blah blah. I don't know how credible any of it is, but you asked, so. All right, I'll go to the next section. So this is about near-death experiences. For this section, we're going to start off discussing the research of another member of University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies, Dr. Bruce Grayson. Just so you guys know, he's not a quack. Grayson is the Chester Carlson Professor Emeritus of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia. He was previously on the medical faculty at the University of Michigan and the University of Connecticut, where he was the clinical chief of psychiatry. Grayson had been raised as a materialist who believed that the physical world was the only thing that existed and that our minds were nothing more than a construct of our neurological processes. When he started his psychiatric training back in the 70s, he was confronted by patients who seemed to leave their bodies and see and hear things from another perspective that he couldn't explain logically. So as a scientist, he decided that he had to study these phenomena and figure out what was going on. That was 50 years ago, and he's been studying near-death experiences and the people who have them ever since. The bulk of Grayson's life's work has been about the study of near-death experiences, what they are, why they happen, and why they could potentially and what they could potentially mean about the nature of human consciousness. Throughout his career, he has studied and recorded thousands of near-death experience reports and testimonial. So instead of giving you guys a widely cited example or two of famous near-death experience cases, I'll lay out a summary of the way most of these things play out. First off, obviously, the patient has to die. Generally, people who have near-death experiences have been dead for several minutes before being resuscitated. During this time, it's common for people to report turning to the quote-unquote other side, where they're greeted by spirit guides in various forms, deceased loved ones, and sometimes an omnipotent being they immediately recognize as God. But obviously, none of these things a person experiences in the so-called other side can be corroborated. I will note, though, that it's very interesting and telling to me that the vast majority of these testimonials share these commonalities, but that's not the most interesting piece of the puzzle here. To me, what makes near-death experience such a fascinating phenomenon to study concerns what it can reveal about the true nature of human consciousness. Because as Dr. Grayson points out repeatedly in his work, there are hundreds of examples of near-death experiences in which people who have been flatlined with zero brain activity for several minutes are able to accurately report sights and sounds that transpire within the ER or ambulance where their dead body lay. During times like these, people report floating above their bodies, watching as doctors make attempts to revive their lifeless corpses. After being resuscitated, people generally reflect back on this time of separation from their physical bodies with a sense of overwhelming calm and peace, an otherworldly type of peace they claim they can barely describe with words. It's not at all uncommon for people to be able to accurately account for conversations and happenings that transpired in the room while they were dead. One story that Dr. Grayson frequently cites was that of a young man who, bizarrely, claimed that one of his doctors was doing a sort of chicken dance before making attempts to revive him. Grayson immediately thought that this must have been a hallucination of some kind, but he's made it his business throughout the past 5 decades to make any attempt he can to verify these sorts of accounts, so he tracked the doctor down and sheepishly asked him if he was in fact doing a chicken dance before operating on the patient. As soon as he asked it, the doctor seemed confused and embarrassed. He eventually admitted that, at the time, he was in the habit of doing a stretching exercise that resembled the chicken dance to work out a pain from a recent shoulder injury. These types of inexplicable corroborations are very common during near-death experiences, but perhaps even more interesting is what happens to people after the experience. But wait, before I get into that, I just want to see what you guys think of that. Like, how do you explain someone that's dead for several minutes, yet being able to tell a witness or, you know, an investigator exactly what happened in the room while they have no brain activity, no heart rate, no nothing for, like, 2 to 6 minutes.
I think the body, we don't necessarily understand how it works after we're dead. I mean, who the fuck knows? You might continue fucking hearing things for a while. You might be, and also, like, as far as, like, just seeing things after the fact, which I guess we're gonna get to, it's like, you can have, like, apparently you dream, you have, like, a fucking million dreams a night and you don't remember any of them. We could be having, like, so many fucking crazy vivid dreams after we die. That could be so much more, like, vivid than any dream we can possibly even imagine right now. I think a lot of it just has to do with us not understanding.
Yeah, but if you're assuming that, I don't know what your beliefs are, but based on what you guys have said tonight, it seems to me that you think once you die, you're just, like, you're dead. Your brain is what creates the perception of consciousness. So how do you explain someone like this who is dead, like if your brain creates the perceived notion of consciousness, like you can perceive things that are happening around you, how do these people who have no brain activity and no heart rate, how are they able to tell you what's happening in the
room? I wouldn't even say that's the case for me. I just don't know, you know?
Yeah.
I think when it comes to like after death type things, I don't think anybody really understands. And I actually think this is actually kind of interesting, right? Like, I think this is something that people should keep studying and trying to understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat where I can't really speak to this because, you know, as a person that's alive, I can't really know what being dead is like and what sort of ideas I can conjure up. And I'm sure there'll be some scientific discovery or experiment that highlights kind of the exact scientific minutiae that goes into the crazy phenomenons that we see and experience when we're dead. But until then, I'm just kind of, I don't know, I can't really say it. I don't really have an opinion on this because, you know, it's a real, like, one man's experience. Like, what one person experienced is not something I can relate to because I wasn't in that room and I wasn't having that moment, you know? So
yeah, but it's a trend. It's a trend within these things. And like there are scientists who try to debunk this by saying, like, I'm sure you guys have heard the DMT theory that like when you die, your brain, there's like a DMT flood or whatever of like, you know, DMT that's stored in your brain somewhere. Or it, also people think that like that helps you dream, but that is actually just like a theory. There's no real proof that that happens. We don't know for sure that that's what's happening. And there's definitely no, because if you're going to take like modern science at its word, which most, I would say it's fair to say that like most of the modern scientific community believes that life ends when the brain dies. So like that, this kind of stuff, and like I said, there's a trend of these stories. Like,
even if that's the case, like they don't necessarily even understand how the brain fully functions, right? Like, just because they're not seeing, like I don't know if they're like actually, I doubt they're actually sitting there scanning this person's brain to see that there's zero activity during that time.
Yeah, but they know if your heart stops pumping for minutes, you know that you're. Like we do know that like your brain, that's why people, those moments are so essential because your brain can't go without oxygen. It needs blood flow to get oxygen. So if you're not getting either,
curious to see that
if you're not getting either of those
MRI
things,
scan like, as somebody dies.
Yeah. I mean,
I wonder if that exists. I don't know if I'd want to watch it. Actually, it'd freak me out, but
it would be difficult to get, I'm sure.
Wasn't there like a scientific experiment that like people did during the French Revolution where after a person got guillotined, like they were instructed like to blink as many times as they could, like while their heads were being chopped off or something like that? Like, I don't know. That's so funny.
They're like just asking you like, all right, we just need one more favor from you before we kill you.
Yeah, before you completely kick the bucket. You mind doing this like one last thing for fucking science? That'd be totally rad.
We will
rad.
Give your children five loaves of bread if you do it.
Yeah, I'd be totally down for that. Like if I was like in my deathbed and they were like, yo, can we actually like do some like freaky ass experiments to you? Like during your last like moments of living, because it might lead to the cure for cancer. I'm like, yeah, fuck it, sure, why not? Do whatever. my time is coming soon. So fuck it, why not? You know, just do whatever.
I guess it's a real so like funny. Manny DeVito months. No. The French Revolution is so funny because it's like obviously the people who are cutting off your head hate you. You hate them. You're like your biggest fucking political rivals. They're like, could you just please like maybe try to blink. I know you hate us, but like could you just do us a favor for science? Yeah. You know. But all right, so people who have near-death experiences almost universally no longer have any fear of death. In fact, many of them develop a unique fear of life, because they have experienced firsthand the sort of unadulterated bliss, peace, and love that this supposed quote-unquote other side has to offer. If they were previously involved in highly materialistic pursuits or career paths, many experiencers will switch careers. They often find it difficult to reintegrate back into normal society after having these experiences. Romantic partnerships that were previously carefree can become strained due to one partner undergoing an overnight radical shift in worldview. But this is kind of spooky. But not all near-death experiences are all about love and light. A small minority of them are actually quite terrifying, like extremely fucking terrifying. Some people report being dragged into dark depths by malevolent entities that harm and shame them for perceived wrongdoings perpetrated throughout their lives. Some people report walking through a fiery place that people familiar with Christianity would immediately recognize as hell, complete with fire, brimstone, and overwhelming stench of sulfur, and thousands of angry demonic beings who wish nothing more than to assault any unfortunate soul trapped there. Which, to me, I like, when I was looking into this stuff, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I read that shit, that like some of these people have near-death experiences are like, they're totally hellish and they get like fucking assaulted and all this horrible stuff happens to them. I'm like, God, that's fucking terrifying. But again, I have to reiterate that those negative experiences are few and far between. The vast majority of NDEs are positive, life-affirming, and filled with beauty, discovery, and most of all, an almost unfathomably complete sense of love, peace, and total acceptance. So that's near-death experience. I mean, I've been most interested in that lately.
For me, it's one of those things where, like, of course your shit's going to change. Like even just me, like, whenever I turned 30 last year, like, I feel like I almost turned into a completely different person over the course of, like, a month of me just freaking out about becoming an old person, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine actually having died, you know? Like, you're gonna change, regardless of whether you dream anything or not. Like, you literally died. Like, you're gonna have a different aspect on, like, a different viewpoint on life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, like, it just goes to show you that for the people who say this is all like a neurological process, like the brain is dying and you have hallucinations or whatever. If it was just that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if these people would change that radically. And like, you know, I was reading a story about a guy who was like a businessman or something. He was entrepreneur.
I read
something.
That story too.
And then he had something like this and he went into like hospice care or something. It's very common for people to go into like service careers after this because they experience this like totally spiritually profound experience that they can't shake. They can't even like exist in society as they knew it, you know?
It's not even that. It's like they probably just actually realized that they weren't getting anything out of their life. Like they were working and they were making money, but they weren't getting any kind of like actual enjoyment out of their life, which it just makes total sense to me. Like, I feel like I would probably do something similar if I fucking died, right?
Yeah, I can see that. Well, all right, so this is the last section, the conclusion / miscellaneous stuff. This is where I get into some more like kind of goofy paranormal shit. So okay. Real quick,
because the other ones weren't before.
All right, well, you can say that. I think it's really fucking cool. I think all of this stuff is super interesting.
Oh no, it's
but...
there are interesting. I'm not gonna deny it. It's not like they're not interesting to listen to. I just think they're goofy in the sense that like this is all bullshit and I don't believe most of this.
I mean, personally, I think it's bullshit to just look at the world like it's everything that you see in front of you is exactly the way it is, and that you know so much that about the world that you're totally unwilling to accept the fact that there might be something you don't understand out there.
I mean, keep in mind, I haven't said once that like any of this is actually bullshit. It's just I haven't seen evidence enough to make me believe it.
I mean, I don't. I'm not like a proponent of any religion or like intense like spiritual belief in any one direction or anything like that, but I definitely am open-minded to it, and I feel like it, especially through my experiences with like psychedelics, and you know, I did like DMT a couple times, and I don't even know how to tell you guys about that experience, but the one thing that I came out having from it was like, if there's anything I can tell anybody about this, it's like I am absolutely positive that like everything we see around us is a fraction of like what is actually going on in the world. So that's kind of partially why I got into this stuff, which I'll kind of get into later.
I mean, I would say that I am a fairly spiritual person. I wouldn't say I'm like religious, but like, I mean, I'm open to things. It's just, if I can't see it, a lot of the time it's just going to come down to me being like, I believe this because I want to believe it. And a lot of this stuff, it's like, I don't have that feeling about aliens or reincarnation or things like that. Right. That would take that like leap of faith from me that like, I have no reason to make.
Yeah. All right. So real quick,
I should also preface that, like, I see, like, if this was all part of like a religion or something like that, then I would have like no qualms with that, you know. So like when I think about like reincarnation, use that for example, like I'm particularly thinking about that from like a religious perspective, you know, particularly from from the perspective of Hinduism. Like I have no qualms with that, because even though that still isn't something that I personally believe in, I recognize that that is not only part of a spiritual mindset and religious philosophy. I also recognize that it's also just part of how they see the world, and I have no problems with that. That is a completely fine way to look at the world, because the world, as much as we try to find logic and reason in it, can still do a lot of like crazy weird ass shit that we just can't explain. So naturally people will look to things like religion as a means of finding explanations and meaning for themselves. And that is a totally valid way to look at the world. I have no problems with that. I guess like for me though, there's a difference between that and just being like, yo, aliens, bro, because trust me, please. I totally got my source. Like to me, that's just like trying to make something happen that just I just don't see any evidence or reason to believe that it can happen, you know. Hopefully I'm explaining myself very well, because like it's not that I don't want to believe that this shit doesn't exist. It's just that for me personally and the way I view things, it's just there is just so much stacked against it that I couldn't possibly believe that such bullshit exists. That's kind of what I'm trying to say.
I mean, I just don't understand why it's like, all right, so if someone says they believe in reincarnation from like a legacy of spiritual practice, like, a, you know, in terms of a religion that's been passed down through generations, like why is that more valid than being like, oh, well, there's this group of scientists or researchers at this university that have been doing studies into this stuff, and there's actually like some interesting evidence that they've presented that supports that hypothesis. Like why?
Because
I don't understand. Like,
because the difference being is that like from a religious or spiritual perspective, they're not. The point isn't that they can prove that shit happens, or the point isn't that they can like definitively explain like how that process works. It's a leap of faith. They trust and they fully believe that reincarnation is a thing, and it's something that they will experience, and it's something that gives their lives meaning and their way of processing how the world works. Like, so from that perspective, I have no problem with that. That is a perfectly fine way to look at things. But there's a difference between that and then like say like, you know, scientists trying to prove that reincarnation is a thing, you know, like that's different now, because now we're trying to like accurately and like objectively trying to find some scientific detailed reasoning for how, you know, reincarnating into a bloat fly or a movie star works. That's not a tangential thing that I can like grasp onto. Like dinosaur bones are real. Chemistry is real. Gravity is real. I can look at and feel these things happening in my life, but that's not the same thing as reincarnation, where I can't see or feel or physically touch reincarnation if such a thing exists. So that's like my main reasoning for why it's okay to believe that stuff from a religious and like spiritual perspective, but like from a actual analytical perspective, like I just find that a bunch of bullshit.
Well, for me, it's like I've always had a hard time. I grew up Catholic, and I always had a really hard time believing in any of this shit, really, because it's like, all right, so I'm going to this place where some guy apparently says this stuff that was written in this book, like, whenever fucking 2,000 years ago. I don't really know why I should believe in that more than I believe in, like, the fucking cartoons I watch. Like, what is, you know, what's actually proving that any of this stuff is real? To my mind, like, seeing that there have been experiments or stories or testimonials, case studies, things that I can't really explain, and that there's been research that's done into them that is interesting and, you know, well documented over the past couple of years. In the case of DOPS, they've been around since the 60s, so they've been doing this stuff for a while. They're still reputable. I don't know. To me, that kind of like made a light bulb go off in my head, where it's like, oh, like maybe this stuff, there is something to this stuff. Because without that, without analyzing it at all and just taking it all based off faith, it's like, what makes you actually believe in it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of Tim's point was sort of what I was saying, where it's like, I think these types of things, at least at the moment, require a sort of leap of faith, just due to the evidence that is available. And I have no reason to make that leap of faith for those things at the moment.
Yeah,
that's why I'm willing to like say I probably believe in like a higher power or something, but like why, I don't know, just because I feel like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I haven't fully made the leap of faith yet. I mean, I've been considering, because I am interested in near-death experiences and reincarnation, like maybe I would get into Buddhism or Hinduism or something. But I don't really have like an organized religion or a doctrine that I follow around this stuff. I just think it's all pretty interesting at this point.
I definitely think it's interesting and worth looking into. Like, I'm not saying this stuff is like, it's stupid for like even being interested in there or wanting to talk about it on here. Like I'm not of that mind. I still think with the scientific evidence that's available, it's still basically just, I believe it because I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm kind of a similar thing where when I say it's bullshit, it's not stupid. Those are not the same thing. I'm saying they're bullshit in the sense that I just don't believe it. And there's no evidence backing that these things exist, but I am willing, they are interesting in the sense that, oh, I can see why someone would believe in this and why they would be so passionate as to argue why they would argue for this to exist, you know? So, you know, I am not going to take away anyone's experience if they wholeheartedly believe that aliens exist and they've done all this crazy shit that we supposedly believe they did. Like, suppose that Roswell, New Mexico, Area 51, which just went down exactly like the UFOtologist would say, or like the Phoenix, the strange Phoenix air lights or whatever, were aliens. Okay, great. But I guess, like, again, it's, what's really just tripping me over is just, I'm trying to think of this as like as logically and rationally as I can, where it's like, okay, suppose aliens do exist, then why the fuck are they going about trying to communicate their existence in the most vague, just like Reddit-y, like pranky way possible, you know? Like, just why don't they just make themselves very clear? Or if they don't want to be seen, then why are they doing such a piss poor job at concealing their identity from the world? You know, it's,
well, you guys were just saying that they are concealing their identity. Like, what, why is there only these grainy videos?
But he's saying why would they stop down on a playground and telepathically talk to a bunch of kids if they don't want to be seen?
Like, if this shit happened in 2024 and the aliens really wanted us to know they existed, they would take someone's fucking iPhone, record themselves saying, yo, I exist, peace out, and post it on TikTok.
If they wanted us to save the world because we're destroying it so hard, like, how easy would it be for them to just fucking come down here and show us all, you know?
Well, that very well might happen. I don't fucking know. I don't know. Like I said, I think all the evidence is like at this point a breadcrumb trail, and we're getting kind of a slow leak of information about the alien topic throughout the it all started in 2017. That's when like the government's entire front-facing opinion and like their sort of method of dealing with this topic at all totally changed. And I mean, do you guys remember that? They released those videos, the Pentagon did.
Yeah.
Like it was a huge shift in the way the government was handling this. Because before then it was like ridicule, cover up, don't even fucking mention it. If anyone does mention it, laugh it off. But now it is taken seriously to some degree. And I think that's interesting. I wonder why that is happening, you know?
Yeah, me too. I just we can't jump to conclusions until we actually have information, you know? So I don't know. I definitely think I won't be like shocked and surprised if they come out and say, this is all the information we have. They've been around for 60 years. I won't be like, oh, I would have never seen that coming. But I'm not going to be like, I know for a fact that that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything for a fact. I'm just saying I definitely put more stock into it than you guys do. Maybe partially because I think it's fucking cool and I want to believe it. I'm not, you know, opposed to admitting that that's part of what it is for me. But I think like things like the Ariel School incident are really fucking interesting. I think the fact that a super reputable child psychologist went over there and interviewed kids and was like, no, this, I mean, you have to realize like child psychiatrists, like their job is to determine whether kids are fabricating things or telling the truth, you know, like part of their job is that they're, if you're going to trust someone to say,
people will do literally anything for recognition. Like you don't take into account how much people are willing to lie, cheat and steal just for their name to be published.
I guess, but you can say that. These people, like, why is this previously very respected Pulitzer Prize winning dude all of a sudden, now that he touches this topic, now he's an egomaniac? Why? Like, why?
Because he touched fame, bro. That Pulitzer Prize got to his head.
He was already famous before this, so it's like I don't know like why he would need to.
I'm just kidding, but like I'm just saying people lie. Is all I'm really saying. I'm not actually saying they're all
people.
Egomaniacs.
Yeah, people lie, but people also tell the truth. You know, I guess maybe I'm gullible for saying this, but I think people tell the truth more often than they lie, especially about life-changing shit that's happened to them. If there's some guy like fucking going off for decades about how this experience changed his life, like have you guys ever watched interviews with this guy, Travis Walton, who claimed that he was abducted by aliens? Like, I implore you to watch a full interview with that guy and tell me that he's just making shit up, because he's like visibly shook by all the things that he's talking about. Like to say that the dude's lying.
Are you talking about the guy who, I've definitely heard of this before. Are you talking about the guy who was like with the lumberjacks and he got like hit by the ball of energy or whatever, and then he woke up with like beautiful looking human people or whatever on a spaceship? Is that the story you're talking about?
I don't know. All these things kind of get mixed together. Right? Travis Walton is the guy. Have you guys ever seen Fire in the Sky, the alien movie?
No.
That his experience is what that movie, it's like a 1980s alien movie. His experience is what that movie is based on. He did like a long interview on Rogan, I think, which I know I don't like Joe Rogan, but he does have interesting guests on sometimes, and that was a really cool podcast to watch about his experience. But I don't know. I mean, we could probably wrap it up here, guys.
I feel like most of these topics aren't even things I'm like heavily against either. Like, I honestly, the reincarnation thing, I kind of think is bullshit. But I mean, aliens and like, I don't know, fucking afterlife stuff. Like, I'm pretty open to these types of things. It's just I'm not gonna just blindly believe everything I read.
If every single I will say this. Suppose all these things were real, then I can still benefit from this, because then I can live out my real life Dandadan, which is a manga / anime that I think you'd Culture Nick would actually like, because it's basically a story about two kids. One believes in aliens but not ghosts, and the other one believes in ghosts but not aliens. And so they go to like these like highly like active places for aliens and ghosts. And it turns out that both ghosts and aliens are real in this universe. So they go both like engage in like super high action anime battles against the ghosts and aliens and shit like that. So if all the shit that we've been talking about today is in fact real, then I can truly live out my real Dandadan experience. Then yes, my life would significantly be better in almost every way possible. But until that happens,
so,
again, I think this is all bullshit. It's cool, interesting bullshit, but it's bullshit nonetheless.
So my question, I guess, to the, like my final question here, if you believe in all of these things, they can't all be like, they can't all exist together. Some of them conflict with each other.
Like what?
Like if you go to heaven or hell, right? I don't think reincarnation would necessarily exist. And would aliens be reincarnated with us?
Yeah, like so then we get into this slippery slope of like, well, okay, then did Jesus create aliens too? And are aliens also going to heaven or hell along with humans? Like, are they like dogs where like once dogs die, they're just fucked because they don't have enough of a soul to go to heaven or whatever, you know? Like then we're just getting into these like weird hypotheticals.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying not all these things can be real.
I don't think that's necessarily true, because I think that a lot of these people, if we want to get into
this, basically like living in Harry Potter world. Like we're literally living in some fantasy world.
Well, so a lot of people talk about once they go into these near death experiences, there's a common thing called a life review where they sit around and like watch, this is an interesting thing that also makes it kind of more credible to me that so many people talk about this life review aspect. They watch like the most consequential moments from their lives, whether positive or negative, and feel the ramifications of every moment or every decision from any party involved that it affected. So for example, I was reading this one guy who like he got into a bar fight one time, and he at first when he was watching that scene play out in this afterlife space or whatever, he felt himself punching the guy, but at the same time he also felt receiving the punches. And then also there's moments where they talk about, oh, well, you have the opportunity to incarnate into another life. They show the memories from past lives. So I don't know. All of this stuff is kind of interconnected. And I don't, if you read into it a little bit more, and I mean, I know you guys don't really put much stock into it to begin with, but if you were to take this stuff at its word and, or at least lend it a little bit more credence than you do on principle, you would see that there's not a lot of contradiction in it. Actually, it all sort of supports each other in a way, in a weird way. It's kind of all connected. And the aliens.
I'm sure if
the
anybody
aliens
actually
too.
Watches this, the comments will be full of both sides of the argument on this.
Yeah. So let's just talk a little bit about what we're doing next week for the second part of the Halloween special.
Take it away,
yeah,
Timbo.
So. Yeah, this was, I guess, sort of an idea I suggested where we each recommend horror movies, and then we recommend them to each other, and then we watch them, and then we talk about them for next episode. Feel free to watch these movies beforehand as well. I think I already said this in a couple episodes before to give you guys more time to watch, but the films we'll be talking about are a deadly friend from VHS Nick, that was his recommendation. A Dark Song, I think it was called, from Culture Nick, that was his recommendation. And that my recommendation was Climax, which I should preface, I only recommended because you guys were talking about in the episode that where you guys had Gulliff, you guys mentioned you hadn't seen Climax yet, so I figured, yeah. Well, now I gotta recommend it so I can get you guys to watch it. So there we go.
I haven't watched any of them yet because I wanted them all to be fresh, so I'll probably watch them all Sunday so they're all fresh on the mind.
Yeah, same.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for telling us spooky stories to tell in the dark. That was,
yeah, I mean, I realized, I don't know if this was what you guys were expecting, because I guess I kind of decided to take, like, I don't know, like a more research-based approach on it rather than just like spooky stories. I don't know if what you were expecting, but I like it more when it's talking about like the concepts themselves or people who study the concepts rather than just like, oh, I had a haunted house. I like that shit too, honestly. But
I think it'd be kind of fun for us to like... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, this is about what I expected, and I had a lot more fun like this than if you had just told us some like scary, creepy pasta.
Yeah,
because one, this isn't 2012, but also two, you know, I feel like by having it be tangentially real, then, you know, it leads to discussions of do we believe in this or not and why or why not and all that shit, you know, because like what discussions are we going to have by telling us like the 600th Slenderman fan fiction creepypasta, you know, like nothing. Exactly. We're going to have no discussion from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be kind of fun for us to like bring some people on that are like somewhat experts on these things and just drill them from multiple aspects.
That would be really cool. I mean, if we want,
like, bring in like a like a priest or something.
Can we get the ancient aliens historian guy from the History Channel on the podcast? That would be fucking awesome.
That guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
we could probably get him, honestly.
We could probably get him. He's no Chris Stuckman. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, we said his name at least once. So,
do you think Chris Stuckman believes in all the shit that we're talking about?
Chris Stuckman is actually he was raised a Jehovah's Witness, I think. So
I believe it so hard.
And then he left. He felt like it was a cult. I think he put out a long video about it. He felt there was abuse within the community, which is, you know, he's not alone in saying that about that denomination. So
I mean it's literally a cult, so
yeah.
But yeah, Chris Stuckman, hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, stay spooky, everybody.
The audience, you're okay too, I guess. You're also no Chris Stuckman. And goodbye.
Goodbye.